Hey, welcome everyone. This is our 11 a.m. call for our final curriculum module call. So, totally fine. However you're feeling right now, please be okay with it as much as you can. You may feel like, what? How can this be the last call? Like, I'm just barely getting to grips with all of this. You may feel a little bit at sea with it all, or you're just still trying to integrate some of these concepts and ideas. All of that's totally normal. And I think we're not very good in our culture at endings. So it can be weird, right, to kind of come to the end of something and to not either not feel done with it, or maybe to not feel like you're ready for an ending. So I want you to just be with that. Whatever you're feeling is totally fine and understandable. And also just to remind you that you can stay connected to me and to this work for as long as you want. That's done. We're done now. We're like connected. That's a done deal. So I'm going to talk next week when we meet for our call about certification, and I'll talk to you about Coach Match, where I can hook you up with clients, but also about the process for supporting you in both of those aspects. So the idea here is that you will have access to a monthly call that will support you as you integrate these tools with your clients and as you kind of make your own discoveries for yourself. At the moment, that's one monthly call. As we grow and expand, we hope to have more than one call and at different times and what have you. So, but we'll always record those, and it's a mix of some client supervision, things that might be coming up for you personally, and anything that might be coming up in your business. So it's a kind of free for all. So so please know that you'll have complete access to sort of be part of that that community as you keep working away at this stuff. So the way that things are going to unfold sort of now is that we're going to talk a little bit today about the rest of module 10, and this is a completely the last half of this call will be open to you for any questions or queries or anything you want to ask. Next week we meet to talk about certification, Coach Match, and ongoing support. And then the week after that, we have a closing circle. So this is a way of just kind of formally acknowledging that we are reaching an ending of sorts. There is going to be some preparation that you'll need to do for that closing circle. We'll send all that information out to you today, on Thursday. So you'll have 2 weeks to prepare for that. And there isn't much. It's just that we want everyone to have an opportunity to speak. And so it can be really helpful to just take a little bit of time to think about what you want to say. And we give you, a way of doing that that's, ease-filled, no matter if you're an introvert or an extrovert, if you've spoken on every call or you've never contributed on a call, it's totally fine. So let's talk about module 10. I'm just going to share my screen with you. What we're going to talk about today is just revisit the aims of this particular module. We're going to do a bit of a check-in, how you got on with your courage-based goals, your plans, and any action you might be taking. We're going to talk more about the change cycle as a concept, and bringing the program together, how you can set up a kind of structured approach to self-belief coaching, or coaching in your practice that uses self-belief concepts. And then, as I said, we'll have some time at the end for any questions, anything you want to share, where you're at with all of this. Okay, so module 10 is all about coaching with the client's goals and dreams. And this is based on our guiding principle that there is no ideal right or linear process to achieving anything, right? That we just reflect the very human way that most of us get things done, even when we have a nice linear do this, then that kind of plan. That as self-belief coaches, what we're primarily interested in is helping our clients to feel resourced during the process of bringing a goal or a dream to life, that they expect and plan for setbacks and challenges and self-doubt, that we just know that's inevitable, that's going to happen, that's kind of the point, and that nothing's gone wrong and there's never a reason to quit. And that means that we can really access a kind of meta purpose, that it really doesn't matter what the client brings to us in terms of what their goal or their dream might be, that what we do is help them to get to know themselves in the process of bringing that to life, of achieving that. This means that their self-concept is going to expand in the process of bringing their dream to life. So it doesn't really matter where they get to. It's all about who they become along the way, right? That's how they get to be the person who doesn't quit on themselves, who keeps promises to themselves, who does some hard things, who figures stuff out, who has a setback and processes the emotions that come up and notices that, oh, this is a way of healing a long-standing pattern, and actually it's a real gift that that self-doubt came up, because now I get to know that about myself and I can choose to experiment with different responses, and here I am being supported by a coach who understands this and doesn't judge me or expect me to get anywhere in a straight line, right? So it means that it deepens the relationship that we have with our clients. And we have this three-part process. It's in stages, but sometimes we go back and revisit things. We start with a courage-based goal, which we did last week in class together, to really understand, like, why do this now? And what's in it for us? Like, what's the point of it? What would it give us? But also to explore, you know, what does our protector feel about this? What does our healthy self feel about this? Really acknowledging that there are these parts of us that may have conflicting opinions about a particular goal. And also looking at what won't change, no matter how this goal unfolds, right? That actually there isn't perhaps as much at stake as what our protectors and some of our clients would believe, right? Everything is going to hinge on this goal being achieved versus actually it will be okay and I can have numerous attempts, right? And there isn't one thing that is going to make this happen. It's a series of consistent actions. That we help our clients put together a courage-based plan, which is very non-linear and an attempt to reflect our very human approach to getting things done, that is based on the amount of courage we're feeling at any given day. We reward ourselves for getting some stuff done. We start to have a relationship with our goal and with the parts of ourselves that are actually getting this moving. So taking courage-based action is really the part when our self-concept starts to grow, when our client's self-concept starts to grow and expand. This is where we get to find out what's possible. Okay. And inevitably, self-doubt, setbacks, challenges are going to happen along the way. We know that. We expect that. We plan for those as much as possible. We always know we're in choice. No matter what happens, we're in choice. And you only have to do this for one goal and something shifts. It's like, oh, I now have very recent evidence that I can do this thing, which is why I'm right, highly recommending pushing a little bit for all of us to do this ourselves. So you get to see this from the client's perspective. There's kind of nothing like that real world experience. So the homework last week was to put together your courage-based plan. It was pointed out to me this morning that I have these around the wrong way, that actually easy should be in the middle and doable the first ring. So I apologize, that was my mistake. but hopefully you figured it out, right? We just start with what is the easiest thing to do in the middle and work out work outwards. So I just wanted to check in with you all. Like, how did that go? Did you totally resist the process? Did you love it? Are you waiting for the perfect moment in which you have a clear afternoon and you can dedicate yourself to this task? Please share how you found that that experience. Who managed to put together the start of even a plan? You did, Adrienne. How did you go?
Well, I started. My issue is I run into a lot of resistance starting things because I have a lot of self-doubt around trusting myself to complete them. So I've started it, and then it was a lot of pushing past my own resistance of, you're not doing anything yet, Adrienne, you're just writing things down. So even for me, this was my easy, or my easy, making this thing needed to be my easy, that also felt a little bit risky. That's the other thing I ran into. I had a bunch of tasks that I were like just action-based things that I wanted to do, but the risk felt really high on them, even though they were just really simple things. So I was a little bit conflicted on where things belonged.
Totally understand that. So it's such a great thing to share. I guess I'm curious to know, like, how do you get things done normally? Like, are you a planner? Do you like to plan? Or tell me about that.
I do like to plan. I have a bullet journal. I, like to do all the little artsy things and then make my list. And, but I like to plan, but then I also fight against it, I think. I have to, like, okay, Adrienne, you said you were going to get these things done today. You need to get them done. So, yeah.
So tell me about, like, what comes up when you're taking action?
So for me, when I was real little, I decided to jump into the deep end of a pool before I could actually swim. And it was that, I'm going to drown kind of feeling. And that's the kind of feeling I get when I'm fighting against that resistance. Like, I'm going to drown.
That's kind of powerful, right? Because that's like, if I do this, I might die.
Yeah. So it's just a matter of saying, you're not going to die, Adrienne. and being able it's been an ongoing process for me to recognize that feeling and trying to just work my way through it.
What is that, like, that feeling? Is it at that age of you jumping into the pool? Like, is that the you that comes up when you think about that?
No, because that idea of it just kind of came to me as I was sitting down doing this. I think it's just a lot of life happening and things not going the way I thought they would, and dealing with past trauma. And then, before it was easy to make excuses. Oh, I had just moved country. Oh, I have a new child. Oh, I need to learn the language. Oh, this is too hard to do it here because it's different than how I would do it in America, because I live in Italy now, but I've been here for 11 years. So those are just excuses. Sure. And it was just dealing with a lot of trauma stuff and recognizing that I don't have to listen to that messaging anymore. And because that one thing happened doesn't mean this thing's going to happen again.
And how is that, just even acknowledging that there is a part of you that is kind of repeating those old voices and messages. I'm curious to know, like, does it help you to just kind of acknowledge those? Where do those voices go when you're trying to take action? Do they stay with you, or do you feel like you're fighting them?
I feel like I'm fighting them. Yeah, I do feel like I'm fighting them sometimes, because it's very easy for me to rationalize everything, but that doesn't always help me take action.
Yeah.
Well,
and often what happens is that those voices are at the age that they were formed.
Mm-hmm.
And so we try and rationalize them with our kind of adult self and go, hey, you're probably not going to die. You're probably not going to drown. And so I'm wondering if something you might want to try is to ask them what is that part of you need?
Yeah.
Right? Like that sense of a kind of internal conflict is really, really common. Like it's a very kind of understandable response to try and kind of rationalize and dampen down and sort of take care of those protective voices, particularly when they've come from trauma. But I'm just curious to know what might those parts of you need from you?
I think what I've been kind of dancing around is acceptance. I need to accept who I am and the things I enjoy and who I want to be, and keep listening to the voices that tell me that's not okay, or I can't do that, or when are you going to grow up? And, you know, so yeah, it's acceptance.
I can really feel that. Like, that's important, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so something you might want to think about is how does that show up day to day? How do you know you're accepting yourself?
I don't know. I still haven't figured that one out yet.
Yeah. Because that could be just a way in, right? A gentle, compassionate way in. It's like, oh, you've figured out this really important thing, right? That actually there's some relief and some love for yourself to be shown when you acknowledge that, you know, you can accept all of you.
Yeah.
And often that comes down to, you know, being really curious about how you're feeling and what you need.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. A really lovely, I mean, I share this, I'm feeling quite teary just listening to you, Adrian, because I share this with you. That was a huge part of me, like really making peace with some of the stuff that I grew up with. And a beautiful practice that was shared with me was to have a little morning journaling with yourself, with that younger part of you. And even just saying, like, how are you feeling today? And what do you need today?
Okay.
And it's just a really lovely way of kind of opening yourself up to a dialogue with those parts that might just be feeling a little wary and pop up and go, whoa, let's not do this because it might be dangerous. We might drown.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Just getting into that habit of, you know, speaking to yourself like, oh, sweetheart, how are you feeling today? Right? And what do you need today? What would be good today? And then you're getting like a little breadcrumb trail to follow.
That's good. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it could be that just starts to loosen the grip of resistance as you start to bring some goals to life. Even those smaller tasks, the ones that your rational, healthy self is like, this should be something we can do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you probably can, but there's doing it when you're white knuckling through and fighting with parts of yourself. And there's doing it in a way that's a bit more kind of like open-handed and kind of like, okay, we can do this. It's okay that parts of us are scared or we're not really totally bought into this yet, but let's trust that over time we're going to become someone who can do all of these things.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
You're so welcome. So welcome. I think this is really important for anyone who's feeling that resistance, and we have this with our clients as well. It's just to pay attention where that shows up. And, you know, some practical things you can do is to really like open the client to, you know, really being in that place of acknowledging there will be parts that don't want to do the things that feel really difficult. But also, you know, some practical steps can be, can I break this task down into three different little tasks? You know, can it be even simpler? Even if there's a part of you that's like, oh, come on, you should be able to do this, right? That actually sometimes that is possible. We can do this. It's just that we need to take it step by step. It needs to be a bit slower. And the least resistance you feel, the more okay you're going to be as you move through this. Right. Thanks, Adrian. Anyone else want to share anything that's come up for them, how they've been pulling together their plans, what you've noticed? Very Hadney, with the most divine view.
I know. I'm sorry.
I apologize. It's wonderful. Yeah.
I totally resonate with resistance, Adrian. So thank you for sharing. Mine has showed up a bit differently. I absolutely loved the process. I didn't finish it. I want to say that was a practical issue why I didn't finish it, just time. But so I'm letting that go and not labeling it resistance. But how it showed up, my protector has been like very sneaky in times when I'm calm and like processing, okay, this is a great goal, I have my plan, things feel doable, things feel okay, I know where the risky ones are, I know that the uncertain ones can shift, but do I even want this goal, you know? Why am I aiming for this? Why am I pushing in this way? And I found I had a whole day of like total drowning in my protector. And it was very interesting to watch it, just to watch how the reasoning comes in and how I can rationalize and really lean into the protector, and how I had the plan there. And actually, I'm in the action already because that goal had already started anyway. So it was just like, oh, well, this is way too real now. I have all my steps. So if the steps don't feel that bad, then surely the goal must not be the right one.
Right. Oh, that's fascinating. I just kind of love it when this happens, right? And you may also find it's like, oh, I've got 7 goals that are equally prioritized, is mm-hmm. another way that it can kind of show up in a bit of a sneaky way, particularly mm-hmm. for those of us who like to overfunction.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So I wonder how you're feeling about this now. It sounds like you had a day of that kind of trauma-y stuff coming up, and I'm wondering how you're feeling now.
I had a day where I was trying to fight it, and then I just thought, okay, I'll just be in it for a day. And well, I didn't give it time. I just said I'll be in it, and I had a conversation with my partner and basically just at him, which was good. And it was helpful from his side, because actually, surprisingly, it's very easy for me to sort of manipulate the conversation if I want to. Like, the protector is very, again, like, easily can do that. But surprisingly, he said, well, but that's what you wanted. Like, you knew it was going to be that. And I was like, what? Why are you not agreeing with me now? So that was actually a really helpful like point of, okay, my anchor is here, not him, as in like, this was my goal, this was my intention. I can see how I can, you know, I can see the white knuckling actually you were talking about with Adrian. Like, there is one way to do this, and there is also another way to do this. So I think that now, having just had a bit of time with just allowing the doubt to come up, I think what it's been about is, okay, well, how do I get to do this? So there's nothing wrong with the goal,
yeah,
but actually the way to go towards it, even if the actions remain the same, there's different pathways to those, to meet them. So I feel like I'm not totally past the bits, and I don't think I will be completely. I'll think I'll just keep meeting them in different phases along the way, which is fine. But I think that it was eye-opening to realize that, wait, I'm putting out like big guns if I'm questioning the goal itself. I'm not even questioning the actions. And that was very helpful, I think. It was a realization of, wait a minute, this is exactly what we've been doing for the past 6 months. This is what we've been learning about. Beautiful. Okay, that's fine. You can be there.
I love this so much, because I think, from what I know, there are going to be endless opportunities to quit. And whether that's a sneaky quit where you change the goal, right, or you focus your energy on another goal, or you just go, sod this, and intentionally park it. The fact that you stayed with yourself and were like a bit curious about, why is this coming up? What's this all about? That you like shared this with someone who knows you really well, risking that you would get feedback that wasn't agreeing with your protector. All of this is helping you to kind of build a relationship with your protector in real time.
Yeah.
Right. And I think this is the reason to do this. Even if we don't really have great relationships with goals, or we don't like the language of it, or all of that shiz, the reason to do this is that it doesn't really matter what the goal is. Our patterns of how we experience and respond to resistance are going to show up. It's like whack-a-mole. So on the 8 a.m. call this morning, Jolie was saying, I kind of hate planning, I hate goals, blah, blah, blah. And she's in quite an advanced state of her coaching practice. And we looked at some of the beliefs that were coming up around the thing that she wanted to bring to life. And what she's noticed is that these beliefs are changing and evolving as evidence comes up, right? So she's had this evidence that I'm not going to make it as a running a business or something. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but she's got 6 years of evidence where she has been running a business, and it's like, maybe it's just time to retire that belief, right? It's outdated. At what point do we go, I've got enough evidence that it's probably going to be all right, right? And I think this is really helpful just to recognize that what the relationship we have with any particular goal is going to evolve and change depending on how realized that goal is. But it's all of the resistances and the protective beliefs are going to just shift and change depending on where we're at. So at the start of setting up your coaching practice, just to give like a general kind of example we can all relate to, it's no clients are going to come. And then you start to get some clients and you're like, well, this is all going to end in tears, right? I can't sustain this. And then it's like, well, I can't charge anymore. I can't start a group program. Like, it doesn't really matter where you're at or how much evidence you have to the contrary. Your protector's always going to say, don't do that, you might hurt yourself. And so really, we're not here to kind of argue with that. We're just here to put up alternative realities, right? By leaning into those healthy self resources. And it sounds like, Adrian, that's kind of what you're doing, right? Like leaning into, well, what is possible? And still acknowledging that this is probably going to be with you as you move through this.
Yeah. Yeah, I really resonate with that, what you shared about Jolie's experience. I think it's like, it's been really interesting to see that outfit change, and yet it's still the same. I mean, I think for me, it's like, actually, these were the things, you know, in the process where you asked us to also write down the barriers or the things that can get in the way. And just by engaging with this goal, you know, a few months ago, one of the barriers was, well, because part of the action was, well, the reason I'm doing this is to find a better work-life balance, so not work as much and still be able to earn more. Knowing that one of the barriers was going to be, there'll be a time where I feel uncomfortable because there'll be less noise, less people that I'm taking on because that's what I want. But when there's less, it feels really painful for the protector. It's like, oh, great. Or actually validating for the protector. Here you go. No work for you. You fucked it up now. You raised your prices. No one's going to want to work with you. So it's almost like being at the point where I'm at the barrier, which I've known, I've expected. And yet it's still very shaky. And how easy it is to almost forget that you've done all the prep work and forget you've put everything in place that you have, you know, to help you be resilient through that. So it's been really, really interesting to observe. Really interesting.
Well, and you're describing the exact perfect storm that happens, right? We work to create the scenario we want, then we get the scenario, and then a whole new level of protective beliefs come up to meet us.
Yeah.
And what I love about this is that you really get to see it doesn't matter what the circumstances are. Mm. It matters what you believe. Like, it just doesn't matter. Whatever the circumstances are, they're kind of neutral. It's how we decide to interpret them.
True.
And so your own self-belief, your own, like, really helpful beliefs that you can come up with right now to support you, that could be the way through this, really practicing creating evidence for really helpful beliefs. And, like, a really simple way I've started doing this, and affirmations, generally, research shows us, don't tend to work unless we believe them. Mm. So, you know, there's no point, like, blowing smoke up your own ass. It's basically the rule, right? Don't pretend to yourself, but tell yourself something that you really do believe. One of the things I've started doing is creating, like, three beliefs I want to practice each month, and creating, like, a little desktop wallpaper with them, you know, in Canva for my phone and for my desktop. And, like, one of the things that I'm practicing this month as we're going into launching the next round of the academy is every coach needs SVCA. And I'm like, every coach needs SVCA. I can believe that, right? I'm like, no coach that I've worked with has ever said this was the worst thing I've ever done. They've all said I'm taking something from this that's enhancing my practice. So the more people I work with, the more that this feels incredibly true to me. And so even just coming up with a couple of beliefs that really help you to show up in a way that you want to for your goal, that you believe, that's gonna really start to replace those old voices.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you.
Amazing. Thanks for sharing. Okay, Ruth, is there anything you wanted to share or add, or just let us know how things are going with your own plans? Yeah, Ruth.
So I just found it all very liberating to do, particularly the planning bit. I like concentric rings generally, so it totally spoke to me. And I totally get your retiring beliefs. So I've worked out from the sort of pattern that was occurring on the rings between easy, doable and uncertain, and the obstacles that you asked us to write down when I revisited it during the week. And this, for me, a lot of my obstacles are around people will complain, and, like, I just won't be, you know, nobody will actually want this. I look back at all that I've done in the other business, Answers Action, for 5 years, and the coaching that I've done so far, both money coaching and self-belief coaching. And, you know, it was like my protector was sitting on the sofa and I'm like, but nobody has ever not wanted it. And, like, yeah, when they've had it, they've thought it was really good. Like, what? What are you talking about? And it's just sort of, I was literally able to just tear up a piece of paper with all that written on, and right, it's total crap, and it's not going to happen anymore. And it also enabled me to come to terms with something that so my big fear and things for me that are always on my, I really don't know how to do it and it's all going to end in tears, is things like going on Instagram and raising my head above the parapet and doing all the stuff that I think is evil capitalist stuff.
Yeah.
But actually, if I'm brutally honest with myself, I want to be sought after and known. I mean, that's what I want in the last sort of 10 years of my working career.
Yeah.
And that was just like, I had to have a stiff drink and go for a walk, because I'm just like, God, I've managed to admit this 20 years ago. I'd be famous by now. And fame is what I actually want. Yeah, so it's kind of how to now cram in fame and fortune in 10 years, really. Yeah. Another thing I wanted to say was, just as you know, but I don't think other people know, is my partner had a major stroke 2 months ago, and he is in hospital, and the outlook is not great for his recovery. And when you've got, so I had to kind of have that in risks, because so all my planning and all my bringing it all to fruition has got this sort of, but everything may change again depending on what happens to Steve there. And just kind of how do you, I thought if that came up with a client, even though I've got my own experience of it, I'm not totally sure how I could deal with it. Yeah. So just that sort of, what if there is a big thing in somebody's life that is current and outside of their control, really?
Yeah. It's such a great question. And I think it's going to unfold for everyone slightly differently, right? So your experience, even if you kind of get to a place where you feel okay with your experience, it may be that a client has a different one, right? And so just notice your own level of entanglement, you know, around trying to solve the unsolvable. I think that's the hardest thing for us as coaches, right? Is that there are going to be things in our clients' lives that just are. One of the things that I would offer is that it can be tempting to wait for circumstances to be perfect, right? That's one of the real like strong aspects of the bystander perspective. Like, I'm just going to wait, and when it's perfect and, you know, all things are aligned, then I'll start. And when there are other things going on that life will throw at us, that actually it's about checking in with, right now, what can I do? And what you may find is that with courage-based planning, because the tasks can be as small or as big as we want them to be, like we get to decide all of that, that this can really work when you've got additional just responsibilities, unexpected things come up, whether they're sudden or not, things that you can and can't plan for. But you can still keep going. There is still something that you could do today, maybe. Maybe not today, but tomorrow, right? So it's really about finding a way through within the constraints that you already have. Right? So I come back to what Adrian was sharing earlier, you know, like I've moved countries, I've had a baby, I've had, you know, all of learning a language, like all of those things are absolutely real life things that come up. And if we wait until life stops, you know, the merry-go-round kind of stops so that we can find enough space and time to do things, we'll be waiting a really long time. And so part of this is about just taking it one day at a time, which I imagine is really what you have to do when you've got this situation. And also knowing that it is okay to stop for a month, 6 months, to do what you need to do and to come back. Like those expectations about linear delivery, linear goal achievement, don't apply here. Whatever you need, this can work for you. And part of this, I think,
so far I have been doing that, but I still do have, you know, part of me also thinks, bloody hell, this is really cramping my style. And then I feel, you know, guilty about thinking that, because it's far worse for Steve than it is for me. So at the moment I'm mornings. Well, 8:30 till 2 o'clock work, and then after that, that's time for going to the hospital and all of those things, and that's working quite well. But I crave having a day, you know, where I can devote the whole day to myself, really, in some way. But you just have to do that. And there's actually nothing like a really major crisis for cutting your cloth accordingly, actually. Right. That's one of my main learnings about what's happened, really.
And I think in much the same way that you've given yourself permission to want to be significant, right, to want to be sought after and known, you may want to give yourself permission for other things, right? Like to take more time for you, or less time, you know, to spend it with Steve. But you get to decide. And I think this is the key part to this, is that whatever the circumstances are, there's no wrong or right about them. It's more about how do you honor yourself in that. Does that help you, Ruth?
Yes, thank you. It did.
I love that you had a stiff drink and a walk by just recognizing that you wanted to be known and sought after. What an amazing goal for yourself. Magic. I just want to check in, Kate, and just make sure you're good. Is there anything you wanted to share about your experience?
Sure. I have really appreciated the process and everybody sharing. I just related so much with each one of you. One of the things I noticed is the categories really helped, the easy to risky. And I found that every single task was in each one of them, right? Like, so I was able to be, and I tend to say like, oh, this is totally doable, right? This is doable. And then I get down to it. And I'm like, oh, this is not doable, right? And so it was really helpful to just be able to delineate each one and really honor what was going on with me. Cause I totally white knuckle through and ignore all of the anxiety and fear that's coming up and just do it, instead of saying, this is both easy, like I'm literally pressing a button, and risky. And, you know, how do I honor that and keep moving through? So that was really, really helpful. The other thing that I wanted to share is what I found as I was making my list was, oh, I can include things that are really supportive of me as part of this goal. So like, I can include, for instance, the morning journaling of, what do I need today? That's a really easy task that will support everything, versus it being like all checkbox, you know, all action oriented. So, I mean, that's action, but all forward progress towards this particular goal. So it's just, this is a very supportive way of looking at it. And I really appreciate it. I really appreciated being able to move through it and use these delineations as well. So thank you.
Amazing. I'm so glad, Kate. And I totally hear you on tasks that fall into all categories. And I think what I've started doing is sort of, what are the easy parts of this task versus the risky parts? And often what the risky parts point to are the protective beliefs that I've got. So then it's like, oh, let me build in some extra time here to just uncover what the hell's going on, right? And then I get to decide, do I want to keep that belief or do I want to do some work on it? And this is the beauty of this process and working with this with clients, is the thing that I just keep coming back to, is that you start to see that every time self-doubt comes up, every time there's a challenge or a setback, it's a real opportunity to know yourself more. So you stop worrying about self-doubt coming up. Because that actually becomes you know, the purpose of the goal is to really get to what's going on here. And the thing that I found over the years is that once you kind of heal up or get to know a particular protective belief and decide that that's something that no longer serves you and you want to build evidence to kind of counteract it, the next time you face that on the next goal, it won't be the same. You literally kind of up-level your response to that protective belief. It just doesn't kind of hold weight anymore. One of the beliefs that for me that's happened with is having to keep everybody happy. Like now I'm just like, there's just no, you know how that you know that anxious feeling that just sits right here and makes you want to like throw up a little bit? Like that just used to be me walking through the world and, you know, trying to keep everybody happy. And now I just feel like I can't find that in my body. And so I know that belief is no longer true for me. It's taken a while to kind of unhook myself from it and to, you know, I spent about the best part of 40 years believing that was my role. So it took a while to kind of, you know, unwind that. But just knowing now, oh no, I just don't have that desire. Like it just doesn't feel an urgent or an important thing for me to be doing. I'm good. And I think that has just come from this process of every time it comes up, looking at what it's connected to, understanding how else I can respond, building some evidence to see how that works. And it's both a sudden and a slow process. It's like you kind of do it and you do it and you do it, and then something happens quite quickly and you're like, oh, that was good. That was kind of easy, or there's just less drama attached to it. And then you realize something's shifted. So for anyone who's kind of got that, like, you know, the kind of gremlin-y beliefs that are consistently showing up in lots of different places, lots of different areas, I just highly recommend like spending time with them, uncovering the protective beliefs, building some experiments to try and shift those, to play with them, trying out new ways of being, seeing, you know, really testing the validity. Is it truly your job to, whatever that looks like for you? Yeah. Okay, so thank you so much, everyone, for sharing. I highly recommend keeping going with your plans. One of the things we talked about in the 8 a.m. call was a lot of people were talking about a plan to either resurrect or begin the process of bringing their coaching practice to life. And so you may want to connect with other people. We'll put a discussion forum link in there. Because one of the things that can be really fun is to meet with folks and just share where you're at, right, and be inspired by each other. In the first class, they put together a group called the Creation Station, and it was for about half a dozen coaches who wanted to start their first group program. And so there's been, I think, 3 or 4 different groups that have come out of that. So it can be really fun to just get together and see, you know, how you make that true. So we'll put a thread on the discussion forum so that, you know, if there are groups that want to get formed, you can do that across the different calls, which can be a fun way to connect with other people as well. Alrighty. So the other thing I wanted to just talk about today very briefly is this Prochaska and De Clemente's model for behavioral change. And just really sharing with you how helpful this can be just in thinking about where our clients sit in terms of making changes in their lives and when they are going to engage a coach and what your role is in all of that, right? So this is the model. It's in the Module 10 workbook. It was developed, I think, in the 80s, the 70s or the 80s. It's quite... I think it was the early 80s, but it has been so well tested, particularly in social care and health and care environments. We know that this is kind of the pattern that people follow when they are trying to change behavior of some nature. So it's a 6-stage process, and we just go round and round the spiral, right? So the pre-contemplation and contemplation phase, that is before clients work with us, right? So at pre-contemplation, the client has no intention of changing their behavior. And then something happens that shifts them into contemplation where they're like, this is no longer okay for me. At that stage, there's usually not a commitment to action, but they just recognize something in my life isn't working. And our role in this as coaches is to share what you do and how you help and what is possible, right? This is why we have to keep showing up consistently. How we get Ruth well known and sought after, right, is you build this body of work of messaging that says, hey, I understand where you're at and you can address this challenge, this problem. And that moves clients into preparation, where they are intent on taking some action to address the problem. And in our world, that looks like following you on social media, signing up for your newsletter, doing a free thing that you offer. They're curious about how can I address this problem? And so these first three stages of making a change, this is before they've even engaged with us, right? But this is how you are increasing awareness of what's possible. You're sharing info, so you're educating your prospective clients about what's possible, how you help, what you do, what you believe about their situation. And because you are always aware that there are people that are preparing to address the challenges that they have in their life, you're always making offers to help. So this is why we have to say, hey, I'm a coach. This is who I help. Do you want to chat about it? Right. A squillion different ways we need to find to do this. It means that as more and more people start to see, oh, yeah, I have this challenge. I have this problem in my life. I'm holding myself back in this way. That as they are searching for answers and they discover there is this thing called coaching, they will find you. And I know that it feels like there are a squillion people on the internet and a billion people on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, but I've been on the internet since 2005. So when it was born, I was there for that, catched it in my catcher's mitt. And I can tell you that the internet is a small place, right? People do get to know you. If you are consistently showing up and you're telling a coherent story about the work you do and the value of it to your prospective clients, people will find you. And part of this is about, right, our belief in that. So we might have to find lots of places to tell the story so that people have us in mind when a friend or a sister drops by and goes, oh my God, for the last time, who can I talk to, you know? And then they say, oh my God, have you heard of Kate? She does this amazing thing with business owners. You definitely need to get in touch, right? And it's like, then you start to build that network of people who are going to refer people to you. Even if they don't really know you, they just like the cut of your jib, right? So our job with these first three stages of behavioral change is to keep showing up and believing that our clients are always going to want to work with us because they are investing in their own development through our coaching work. It's actually nothing to do with us. We're just there to help them sort themselves out. At some point, the client is going to say, yep, I'm taking the leap. And then they move into working with us. And so these last three stages are when we are actually working with someone. They're taking actions, right? Active modification of behavior. I really don't love this language. But this is what Prochaska and De Clemente found, is that people need to prepare to take action and then take action and then sustain those actions, those changes, where new behavior replaces old. So in terms of self-belief coaching, this looks like understanding why we're behaving the way we are, why we're thinking the way we are, and making sense of that. So, you know, we need to do that. We need to understand that first in order to change the behavior, right? So we need to kind of understand what is causing the protective beliefs. So as we're working with clients, we are, you know, our interventions, if you like, are about understanding, first of all, what's going on, where the client's at that kind of at that preparation to action stage. So all of this is about the life map, protective beliefs, a belief biography, like vision boards, and understanding their archetypes, really thinking about those kind of broad understanding-based tools that we looked at in the first part of the program. And then as they're moving to action and maintenance, it's very much about, you know, meaning making and the belief buster and the emotions that come up and experiments, understanding how the protector is showing up and working with that, really leaning into the healthy self and all those resources, self-trust, self-acceptance, self-worth and self-belief. And there's always the relapse, right? And that happens both within these phases and afterwards, after someone works with us, where we go back to old patterns. Very, very human to do that. So the whole point of our work with clients then is to both prepare them for changing behavior, supporting them as they do that, and as their new identity and self-concept starts to expand to support who they are now, and also to help them expect that they will relapse, right? They will have setbacks and challenges and invitations to quit, and that they can still lean back into the resources that we've helped arm them with. So in the Module 10 workbook, you'll find a sort of an outline of how you can work with clients at different stages. And this is designed to help you to put together some kind of package of self-belief coaching. You can do this in whatever way feels good to you. What I'm suggesting is kind of follow that the path that we've taken through the program, because that is designed to help you to kind of work with people at different stages. Always knowing that you can start with a goal. Right, you can start here, and then kind of as everything is starting to come up, as they're taking action or not, you can start to unwind and look at the protective beliefs that are coming up. Okay, so the purpose of Module 10 is really to help you see that there's no formula, right? That actually it doesn't really matter what the client brings. You can help them to create a goal, set a plan, and see what happens as they do and don't take action. That can be the path into all of the other tools to look at why they're not taking action and what the resistance looks like, and getting to know both their protector and their healthy self. Start building relationships with those aspects of themselves. So I just wanted to throw open the general floor to anyone who has any questions, anything that's come up, anything you want to check in around, anything that's confusing. You may not have any questions. They may come later, which is totally fine. But does anybody want to just put their hand up, let me know if there's anything you have to ask? Can be about Module 10, can be about anything to do with the program. Yeah, Kate.
Kind of formulating it as I'm speaking. So, but it is about the goal and this process that you walked us through, or, you know, in Module 10. So how, how much of this do you feel like we need to do with our clients? Could I do the goal setting, the first step of it, pre-working with them, you know, versus in the first session? And what are your thoughts around, you know, a bit more hands off on this particular part of the process?
So I've done this a number of different ways, and I guess my answer to everything is kind of, it depends on the client. I know it's really annoying, but I've done this a number of different ways. I've done this with groups where I've sent them the template to fill in the goal, and then we make the plan in a group. And that was like quite a big group where we just kind of went through and looked at how to make the plan. I've done it the other way around, where we went through the plan, the goal together, and then everyone took the plan to go make themselves. So it sort of depends on what you love to do with people. Like, is it important for your clients to articulate the goal, or is it more important to have some concentrated time articulating the plan?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, it's interesting. My feeling is, just like as I'm skimming through that question, I feel like you know, this go around as I start, I've been so goal oriented and like helping people lay out quarterly goals, and it's so structured. And in some ways, I think I want to lean off of it a little bit and say, we can have a real loose structure around goals. And really it's about this deeper contemplative work of what's coming up for you. So, I think that I need to consider how much airtime I want to give this particular process in the beginning versus in the end. I love how this has come up in the end, like as a really powerful tool to engage with your self-doubt through a goal. But that's my initial thought is like, oh, I'm really considering, as I consider my next group project, what am I giving a lot of airtime to? Because right. I tend to give, as we've talked about before, like the structure and the strategy, a ton of airtime. And in this next phase of my work, I really want to give more airtime to the deeper but scarier work.
I hardly hear you. And I think, you know, this may be worth like running past a couple of clients,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, you know, here are these like three themes, perhaps, just for argument's sake, around goals, around strategy, and around like mindset or self-belief. Because it strikes me, like thinking about your client group, that those are the things that they're probably most interested in.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I think that I'm also considering, you know, I have a few different topics that I'm using the structure and the strategy to explore your self-belief, right? Yeah. So I think that I could integrate this in a few different areas of my, integrate this process in to but as a lighter touch, like, okay, well, what are the goals you're setting around this particular area of your business? How can we work through that? What's easy? What's not, you know, and give them a new way in. Because I think a lot of my clients like me tend to say, it doesn't matter how easy or risky it is. I just have to do it.
Yeah, completely. That's what I was thinking as you were talking, right? And so in my head, it kind of looks like this. I don't know if you can see that.
I can, but, yeah.
Self-belief at the top, goals, strategy. It's probably the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
And that you kind of, this is the sort of like the what and the why. And this is the how and the when. Right? of running a business. So the goals are like the how and the when, right, of the strategy, which is the what and the why.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to see all of these things are about context and circumstances.
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually matter what's going on here.
Yeah.
What matters is this. So in terms of like what to prioritize, I think your clients want to prioritize on this. And it's a case of like bait and switch, right? Tell them what they want, give them what they need.
Yes.
Right? So, you know, I think, and that makes sense, right? Because you do need both. You do need to kind of have a strategy. Like what are you even in business for? Why are you here? What does that look like, right? And then the goals are like, the how and the when of what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But if this isn't in there, it doesn't matter what you do.
No, and I think that that's absolutely the challenge I've been experiencing, you know, and why I want to really lean and put it at the top of the pyramid, because I can work with somebody for years and we just keep coming back to their like crippling self-doubt. And so despite them having the best year of their, you know, career, despite all of the things that they've accomplished, they're just like, and I can't get out of bed with, you know, from a place of crippling self-doubt.
And I think this is the thing, is that when we start our kind of self-employment journey, we often think about the circumstances, right? Of like how many clients I have, how much income I make, all of that kind of stuff. How many mm-hmm. followers I have, whatever that looks like, the kind of measurable levels of success. But what we forget is that it doesn't matter where we get to, right? If you're earning 50K, 100K, 300K, 500K, a million, it doesn't matter. If this isn't right, that will be increasingly harder to really own and enjoy.
Yeah.
And I think this is the thing that I found, like, just from working with people who are, in Ruth's words, like, really well known and sought after, right? Like, I've worked with a couple of people who are pretty well known in the UK, and one person who's like, bit of a national treasure. And what that really taught me, and I'm so grateful for having worked with them, is it doesn't matter what success level you hit, your self-doubt is going to match that. And it's like confirmed for me in such a real way that outward circumstances do not impact our self-belief. It all is an inside job. And if you get this right, these things become so much easier to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's been really fascinating for me over the last year, having like really committed to working with a business coach for on a long-term basis, and you know, with a real intention of stretch me. I want my self-concept to just be kind of pulled in apart a bit here. And really seeing that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what the strategy is, because you won't be able to deliver on it unless you believe in it. And it doesn't matter what your goals are. You won't be able to take action towards them unless you believe in yourself.
Yeah.
So getting that right, getting that really clear is the secret sauce. But what so many other coaches talk about is the outside stuff.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
So for anyone who's thinking, well, how does this relate to me? Like, just think about what are the external factors of success for your particular clients, right? What are the circumstances that they're working in? It might be about money, right? It might be about it could be anything, but you think about like the concrete outputs that the client wants, the reason they're working with you. just remember that it doesn't really matter what the external circumstances are, because this is what really matters. This is how they get there in a way that doesn't kill them. Does that help you, Kate?
It really does. It just completely, I just love that, get there in a way that doesn't kill them, because it really feels like life or death when you're...
It does.
I mean, it feels ridiculous, but you're just like, yeah. So it does really help me. Thank you very much. Just continuing to confirm, to lean into that and recognize the risk in it as well. Like, that feels really risky for me. You know, I feel so comfortable in the structure and the strategy and the goals, and it does feel like a bait and switch, because, but in the other direction, because I'm like, okay, now you have your plan. Goodbye. And yeah. Instead of, okay, now you have your plan, let's talk about how hard this might be with the current beliefs you have in play. What are new ones that you want? So really helpful.
And I love the way you've just phrased that, because I think that is the way in, because your clients know this.
Mm.
Right? And I think this is the real key. Like, whenever we're working with anybody and it's about some kind of external solution, if we don't talk about the beliefs that they are carrying into that, it doesn't even matter if they achieve it. Yeah. Hey, Ruth, I see you waving.
Yeah. It was just, I wanted to say to Kate, and to say that's also helped me in another context, but when I first started experimenting with self-belief coaching instead of money coaching, the bit I found most clunky was the archetypes. Was right at the beginning of the process, was to kind of get enough of it across, and what is quite detailed material that has kindly provided, and to kind of keep remembering about them as I went through, because it kind of was something I did as a bit of an intro and then sort of slightly forgot about as we went through meaning making and belief busting and other stuff. But as I've had, because I coach quite a lot of people who are not necessarily with their own businesses, but who are in quite senior jobs in the corporate sector. And I've now found a bit of a narrative at the beginning around, using the archetypes at the beginning has become a good excuse to kind of map out their self-doubt at work, because you get into a conversation about how they've on the archetype scores. So just wanted to share that, really, that I found that quite helpful. But I used to sort of come to my practice pod every week going, oh, I'm really struggling with the archetypes, like they say too much, or we spend too much time on it and I don't think the client gets it and where it fits in, you know. But I found that a good container, and another penny dropped for me slightly in terms of my own kind of coaching with your triangle. And actually saying that, I think I imply it, but I don't think I've ever actually said it. So I will now.
Well, and I have to say, like, this has happened with a lot of folks, is that you get to the end and then go back and it's like, oh, the archetypes finally make sense, right? I can totally see how I would use those in a different way. So yeah, it's one of those things where I think, and this is why we offer like the monthly support calls, right? Is that it's often when you get to the end and you're like, ah, oh, now I'm starting to make connections across the whole program. I can kind of see the point of why you made this into such a big deal, which I didn't agree with at the start. Totally understand that. That you start to kind of go, oh, this actually makes sense now. So what I'm hoping, and it's such great timing, because in the next month you're going to get access to our graduate SBCA Members Portal, which is our brand new learning site. And that's going to help you, I think, because everything is like rebranded and it's all kind of organized in the way I want it, always wanted it to be organized, because we've built it ourselves. I think that might help as well to kind of go through this stuff and look at, okay, what was this really about for me? And how do I make sense of this? And what am I going to take into my practice over the next 6 months? How do I want to set myself up so that I can work with folks on this stuff? So yeah, perfect. But yeah, I don't know how many courses I've been to where it's like you get to the end and it's finally starting to make sense. And then they go, see ya. And it's like, hang on. I have questions. So yeah, so hopefully you're going to feel quite well taken care of as we move through this. Yeah. Okay, lovely people. Well, we will see you next week for a chat about certification and coach match and other bits and pieces. I'll send some stuff out on Thursday so that you you have prep for our closing circle. Which is in 2 weeks' time. And if you come up with questions or anything, there is never going to be a time when you can't go, hang on, I'm confused by this. So, or tell me more about this. So please do just continue to either email or use the client the discussion forum as and when questions come up. But yeah. I hope this has sort of just been a fun way to wrap it up a bit and start to think about how you're going to use these tools. Yeah, great stuff. All right, lovelies. Well, have a great day, and I'll see you all next week. Okay, bye-bye.